Speaker said, "You have a remarkable ability to think like a coward, Louis." "Don't knock it. We're on an alien world. We need alien insights." "Very well. Call him, since you and he seem to think so much alike. I intend to face the eye and learn what lies behind it or within it." Louis called Nessus. In the intercom image, only the puppeteer's back was visible. His mane stirred slowly with his breathing. "Nessus," Louis called. Then louder, "Nessus!" The puppeteer twitched. A triangular head rose in inquiry. "I was afraid I'd have to use the siren."
"Is there an emergency?"
Both heads came up, quiveringly alert. Louis was finding it impossible to return the vast blue stare ahead of him. His eyes kept sliding away. He said, "A kind of emergency. My crazy teammates are about to wreck themselves. I don't think we can afford to lose them."
"Explain, please."
"Look ahead of you and tell me if you can see a cloud formation in the shape of a human eye."
"I see it," said the puppeteer.
"Any idea what's causing it?"
"Obviously, it is a storm of some kind. You will already have reason that there will be no spiral hurricane formations on the Ringworld."
"Oh?" Louis hadn't even wondered about that.
"The spiral form of a hurricane derives from Coriolis force, from the differences in the velocities of two air masses at different latitudes. A planet is a rotating spheroid. If two masses of air move toward each other to fill a partial vacuum, one moving north and the other south, their residual velocities will carry them past each other. Thus, a whirlpool of air is formed."
"I know what causes hurricanes."
"Then you must realize that on the Ringworld, all contiguous masses of air have virtually the same velocity. There will be no whirlpool effect."
Louis looked ahead of him toward the eye-shaped storm. "But what kind of a storm would you get? None at all, I'd think. You wouldn't get any circulation of air at all."
"Untrue, Louis. Hot air would rise, cold air would sink. But these effects could not produce such a storm as that ahead of us."
"Too right."
"What is Speaker threatening to do?"
"Fly through the center of that finnegal-sired thing with Teela loyally following after him."
The puppeteer whistled a tone as pure and beautiful as ruby laser light. "That seems dangerous. The sonic folds would protect them against the ravages of any ordinary storm, but this looks to be no ordinary storm."
"I was thinking that it might be artificial."
"Yes, the Ringworlders would have set up their own ring-girdling circulation system. But that system would have stopped working when the ring power supply failed. I don't see..." "Ah, I have it, Louis."
"What is it?"
"We must postulate an air sink, a region where air disappears near the middle of the storm. All the rest follows. Consider, the air sink creates a partial vacuum. Air masses flow in from spinward and anti-spinward."
"And port and starboard."
"These we can ignore," the puppeteer said crisply. "But air moving in from spinward will become fractionally lighter than the surrounding air. It will rise. Air moving in from the opposite direction, from anti-spinward, will become fractionally heavier."
Louis was groping with an improperly visualized picture. "Why?"
"From anti-spinward it comes, Louis. Its rotational velocity is increased fractionally with respect to the ring. Centrifugal force causes it to sink slightly. It forms the lower eyelid of the eye. The air from the spinward, rising, forms the upper eyelid. There is a whirlpool effect, surely, but the axis of the whirlpool is horizontal, where on a planet it would be vertical."
"But it's such a minor effect."
"But it is the only effect, Louis. There is nothing to interfere with its action or to stop it. It might go on for millennia, building to what you see now."
"Maybe, maybe." The eye seemed less frightening now. As the puppeteer had said, it must be some kind of storm. It was all the colors of a storm, of black clouds and upper sunlight white clouds, and the dark eye of the storm acting as the iris of the eye.
"The problem is the air sink, of course. Why does air disappear near the center of the storm?"
"Maybe a pump is still working in there."
"I doubt that, Louis. If that were so, the air disturbances in this vicinity would be planned."
"Well?"
"Have you noticed the places where the ring foundation material pokes through the soil and the bedrock?" Surely such erosion must be unplanned. Have you noticed how such places appeared more frequently as we neared this place? The ice storm must have upset weather patterns for tens of thousands of miles around, over an area greater than your world or mine.
This time it was Louis who whistled. Tange for torment. But then, oh, now I see, there must be a meteor puncture in the center of the ice storm.
Yes, you see the importance of this. The ring floor can be penetrated.
But not by anything we're armed with.
True. Still, we must know if the puncture is there.
Already Louis's superstitious panic seemed a remembered dream. The puppeteer's analytical calm was contagious and steadying. Louis Wu looked fearlessly into the eye and said, "We'll have to go in and look. You think it'll be safe, flying through the iris?"
"It should be no more than clear still air in a partial vacuum."
"Okay, I'll relay the good news. We'll all fly through the ice storm." The sky was darkening as they approached the iris. Was night falling overhead? Impossible to tell. The thickening, blackening clouds made darkness enough. The eye was at least 100 miles long from corner to corner and something like 40 miles tall. Its outline seemed to blur as they approached. Layers and streamers became visible. The true shape of the eye began to show. A tunnel of churning winds, reasonably uniform, whose cross-section was a picture of a human eye. But it still looked like an eye as they hurtled toward the iris. It was like falling into the eye of God. The visual effect was horrifying, terrifying, almost comically overdone. Louis was ready to laugh or scream, or back out. It would only take one observer to find out whether there was a hole in the ringworld floor. Louis could go around. They were in. They flew down a black corridor lit by lightning. Lightning flashed almost continuously, ahead and behind and on all sides. For a uniform distance around them, the air was clear. Beyond the iris region, opaque black clouds swirled around them, moving at greater than hurricane velocities.
"The leaf eater was right," Speaker roared. "It is nothing but a storm."
"Funny thing, he was the only one of the four of us who didn't panic when he saw that eye. I guess puppeteers aren't superstitious," screamed Louis Wu.
Teela called, "I see something ahead of us." It was a dip in the floor of the tunnel. Louis grinned with tension and rested his hands lightly on the controls. There might be a tinge of a downdraft over that dip. He was less wary now, less tense than he had been when they entered the eye. What could happen where even a puppeteer found safety? Clouds and lightning whirled around them as they neared the dip. They braked and hovered over the dip, their fly-cycle motors fighting the downdraft. Through the muffled action of the sonic folds, the storm screamed in their ears. It was like looking into a funnel. Obviously, there was air disappearing down there, but it was being pumped away at high speed. Or was it being spewed at the stars through the black bottom of the ring world? They couldn't actually see much. Louis did not notice when Teela dropped her cycle. She was too far away, the flickering light was too strange, and he was looking down. He saw a tiny speck dwindling into the funnel, but he thought nothing of it. Then, thinned by the howl of the storm, he heard Teela's scream. Teela's face was clear in the intercom image. She was looking down and she was terrified.
"What is it?" he bellowed.
He could barely hear her answer.
"It's got me."
He looked down. The funnel was clear between its whirling conical sides. It was oddly and steadily lit, not by lightning per se, but by cathode ray effects caused by current differences in a nearly complete vacuum. There was a speck of something down there, something that might conceivably have been a fly cycle if anyone were stupid enough to dive a fly cycle into a maelstrom merely to get a closer look at a puncture hole into outer space. Louis felt sick. There was nothing to be done, nothing at all. He wrenched his eyes away, only to see Teela's eyes above the dashboard. She was looking down into something dreadful, and blood was running from her nose. He saw the terror drain out of her face to leave a white corpse-like calm. She was about to faint. Anoxia? The sonic fold would hold air against vacuum, but it had to be set first. Half-conscious, she looked up at Louis Wu. "Do something," she begged. "Do something." Her head fell forward against the dash.